So visiting Wind Cave National Park in South Dakota, probably a little bit over a decade ago now, I took a guided tour of the cave systems, and they led us deep underground. And at one point, they shut off the lights to show us just how dark it gets deep underground. It's dark. I've never been someplace that was so dark. It was actually kind of surprising to me. I mean, it shouldn't have been, but it was. You could literally hold your hand 2 inches in front of your face and not see it. And so for someone who is used to being able to see, the possibility of being stuck down there with no light is kind of a scary thought. It'd be easy to get lost. How would you find your way out? Now, in dream symbolism, this going deep can be a metaphor for encountering our unconscious, going deep into our souls, is to know ourselves more intimately. And that's how we transform and grow spiritually. But it can also be scary. We often fear change, even preferring the troubles we know rather than risking ourselves in vulnerability in order to grow. It kind of makes me think of that cave experience. We worry that we're going to get lost or run into some kind of monsters deep in that darkness. But when I was in that cave, I wasn't really scared because I had faith that they were going to turn the lights back on. And so it is, I think, with our souls as well. God is our guide. God is kind of our dependable lighting system to lead us in our becoming, to lead us in the journey through the depths of our souls. And I wonder if the people of Israel didn't have some of the same fears, though, when it came to going deeper in their faith. Through the prophet Isaiah, God criticized them because their worship, their religious life, had become superficial. They went through the motions of religiosity, but it wasn't really affecting their hearts. It didn't change the way they live. They acted pious and holy on the Sabbath and festival days, but the rest of the time it was all about getting what they could for themselves. They failed to love their neighbor, and God called them on it. In a way, they were staying on the surface of their spirituality, refusing to take those deeper steps. Maybe they were afraid if they changed, if they got too far away from what they knew, they'd be trapped in the darkness. Maybe they forgot that God is our unquenchable light. God's message to us through Isaiah is that our worship is meaningless if it doesn't transform our lives. God doesn't need our worship. God doesn't have an ego that needs to be stroked and built up. God is going to keep on loving no matter what we do. Worship is mostly for us. And if we think about the etymology of the word worship, we see that it comes from two roots, worth and ship. Worth means what we think it does, but ship is not a boat. It actually comes from a word that means a condition or a state of being. And as a verb, it means to shape or make into a certain state. And so if we follow that, we could maybe then say that worship is the condition of being worthy or honorable. And worship as a verb is to shape our worth. So perhaps the purpose of worship is to shape our worth, to form ourselves into our best selves. Worship is a turning toward God, making sure that we're on God's path of love. It's more than just a set of motions that we do because someone once told us to, whether that was our parents or a clergy person or someone else. And I would propose that there are at least three reasons that we need to come together to worship. Three benefits. Three things that help us become our best, most authentic selves, that shape our sense of worth. And first, we worship, I believe, to experience God's presence, to talk to God and to listen to God. Worship in that way is a form of prayer. Worship is a time when we practice our awareness of God's presence, building relationship, so that we can carry out that relationship into the world with us. And when we are in relationship with the divine, we connect to something bigger than ourselves, and we find meaning from that. Second, we worship to build community. God created us as communal beings. The first thing that Jesus did as he started his ministry was gather his disciples into a community. We're meant to come together to support each other and to help each other grow. Lastly, we worship to be reminded of God's love and to be healed. Walking in God's love sets us apart from a world that's based on power and accumulation of wealth. It doesn't make us better than anyone else, but it means that we're choosing a different focus in our lives. We strive to live in love first, above anything else, because we are beings made of love. And in doing so, we find that healing and our wholeness. When we come together in true worship, we practice being God's kingdom. We learn to live a life of peace and justice filled with love and hope. We're transformed into our best, loving, and beloved selves, the children of God. It's a little like going to a spiritual gym. Now, in a regular gym, as people tell me this anyway, your muscles need tension, right? If you're exercising, you got to challenge your muscles, tire them out. That's how you grow and you get stronger. And I think we work the same way spiritually. We come to church to worship, to work out our spiritual muscles. And it's okay that churches aren't perfect, that sometimes we lose our way or we get in arguments. Churches don't have to be perfect, but they should be places where it's safe to work out those issues, where we support each other even when we disagree, where we can come to worship to develop our spiritual muscles so that we can be strong with love in the world. God told the Israelites in Isaiah that the problem with their worship was that it didn't carry out into their daily lives. If worship isn't changing us and energizing us in at least some small way, then we might have a problem. Jesus says that true worship happens in spirit and in truth. And the one thing that that says to me is that transformative worship requires vulnerability and honesty. It asks us to go deeper into our hearts, to open up to the possibilities of where God might lead us, the truths that God might reveal to us. There are many different ways that we worship. There's what we sometimes call high church, with lots of formality and ritual, everything carefully planned out and regulated. And there's what we call low church, which is more informal, less ritual. And some worship has no music. Some worship is all music. How we worship doesn't matter as much as what that worship is accomplishing in our heart. There are some things, I think, that do help, though. For one, if worship is practice for being God's kingdom in the world, then if we're going to practice something, we probably need to be doing it on a regular basis. And I think worship should also not only be challenging and transformative in some way, but it should be something that we look forward to. Worship should lift us up and renew our energy. And I've been in worship services that drained my energy and the experience was not transformative. And the only challenge I felt was whether I could sit there through the whole hour or not. And part of that, though, is not only what's happening and what's being said in that worship service, but it's also partly the attitude that I bring to the worship service. And I don't mean what mood we're in. It's okay to come to church in a lousy mood, because I hope that worshiping with God and our community will lift us up and brighten our day a little bit. But I'm thinking about, what expectations do we bring to the worship? Are we coming expecting to be bored? Is it just something we feel we have to sit through in order to get to the post-worship coffee hour or dinner? Or do we come expecting to find God's loving presence? Are we looking for all the things that might go wrong or not quite work in the service? Or do we come specifically trying to see all the ways that God is present here with us? Do we come to worship safely hidden in our rational mind? Or do we come willing to open our hearts to God's transforming love? Finding a way to get into the heart is important. We need that element of going deeper within. The deeper we can see inside of ourselves and our neighbor, the easier it is to encounter God's presence. And of course, as important as going deep is, I think we also need to do so in a way that's in harmony with the rational mind. Faith is necessary, but I also think that blind faith can be foolhardy. Ritual is one way that helps move us deeper into the heart. Rituals such as the Christian rites of communion and baptism help us create and reinforce order and meaning. They foster community. They become agents of our transformation. They move us from our head to a deeper level in our hearts by helping us to communicate things that maybe we can't quite find the words for, kind of like poetry. And how we act in worship can affect whether we're in our hearts or our heads as well. For example, worship, in my view, can be a time of sharing, but it isn't necessarily a time for conversation. I think conversation, a lot of back and forth questions and answers, moves us into our heads. But on the other hand, open and vulnerable sharing happens from the heart. And jokes are another thing. Laughter and worship can be a wonderful, but humor is tricky. A joke that may be funny at dinner after church might very well jolt us out of our hearts and into our heads when made during joys and concerns. And I don't want to be critical of the way we worship or the way anybody worships. But I want to invite us to think about what we're bringing to worship. And those are just some ideas and thoughts that I had to make us more aware of how we're contributing to the worship service, even if we're not standing up here. One suggestion that I've heard that I really like is to think of everything that we do in worship as an offering to God. Now, music, whether it be instrumental, a solo, or congregational singing, that's easy for me to think of as a gift to God. And it's another thing, actually, that can help us move deeper into our hearts. I think for most of us, music goes to the heart instead of the head. And in a way, I'm personally particularly weird, because music doesn't stick in my head very well at all. I don't remember lyrics well, and I've never experienced an earworm, you know, that song you just can't get out of your head. And yet music can still make me want to move. It can energize me. Or it can serve as a catharsis to release pent up energy. Music can make me sad, or it can make me happy. It certainly affects my heart. Music creates some of our most powerful memories and emotions. People with dementia, when they can no longer remember who the people around them are, often still retain the ability to recall the hymns of their childhood. And then the energy of music, whether it's slow or fast, mournful or joyous, that all affects us as well. And of course, because music can be so emotional and heart-centered, lyrics can sometimes get by our thinking filters. And so maybe it's good also to stop once in a while and ask, what are the words that we're actually singing? What messages are we putting into our unconscious when we sing? And I'll also acknowledge that music doesn't always move us deeper. We might run into a song that's new and difficult to sing. Or perhaps the lyrics conflict with so much with what we believe that it brings us back to our heads, out of our hearts. I know there have been times when I've stopped singing a song because I found its theology objectionable. And for all of these reasons about music and the wonderful and problematic ways it plays into our worship, I'm kind of excited to spend the next few weeks reflecting on some of the music that we sing and what it means to us. And so I hope you'll be here in October as we do that. Worship is, I believe, one of the most important things that we can do for our spirituality. Regularly encountering God in community, supporting and challenging each other in our growth, going deeper and opening our hearts to the transformation of God's love. Are these what it means to drink the living water that Jesus talks about? Necessary life-giving water that leads to eternal life, that changes us and draws us closer to God and to each other. As we continue our worshiping life together, may the love of God, the living water of Jesus, become a fountain in your heart, going deep and then bubbling up and flowing into the world in the form of hope and peace and justice for all of God's children. Amen.